Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric Stevens here, and the Dodgers suck. So, all right, that's not. Let's. How about this? The Dodgers are sucking. That's okay. a better tense to use.
That's absolutely true. So the one positive, right, is that we can sort of hold off on wondering if the Dodgers are going to win 120 games this year. Like, so at least there's that.
There is, I think, another good thing to talk about, and we'll get to it afterwards. They're still, you know,
they at this moment, they literally have the best record in the National League.
Now they can't compare to such a powerhouse as the Kansas City Royals.
I was just gonna say you're in Kansas City basically, and you're podcasting about a team with the second best record, tied with like actually several teams, but then also living in a city with the team with the best record. And so, and then on one hand, like, what if we said the Dodgers and Giants would have the same record?
What would you predict the record to be?
that's warning flag season, right? Like, so yeah, it's a problem. But yeah, they're struggling.
We're gonna go over why, see if there's any silver linings, kind of map out what we think is gonna happen.
The sky is falling.
All of that after this.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I was wondering on a day game, which was...
You're right.
Oh my gosh, you can't afford to do this.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's part of one of the points I'll have in there. Like,
who's hitting eighth? That's my question.
Barnes. But Rayleigh's hitting seventh. Yeah. So, yeah. So the point, yeah, right, like, he's started, this is like his eighth start, and like, he's fine, but...
And he's about to say, when he's the good one of the depth.
Yeah.
Bad. All right. Here we go. Just getting back to real quick to the silver lining, it's this interesting slump in that not only, you know, yes, they still have the best record in the National League and are, you know, one decent streak and one slightly medium streak from the Royals from being atop in the majors again. But there's a reason for that, and it's starting pitching. So, like, hey, something's going right.
Yeah, like, it's weird. Like, well, and, you know, you sort of forget, like, they were literally 13-2, like, to start. But now they're 15-9 because they've lost seven of the last nine. And, on a very simple level, like, they're just not hitting. Like,
And it's this weird thing where, like, when you're in a slump like that, everything just becomes magnified when you, like, kind of chase for excuses. And, like, some of the excuses have, you know, at least whispers of validity to it. I think across baseball, zones have been awful. And that just becomes so much more frustrating when you also can't hit. Seven of the, you know, if we say the slump has been, what, the last 10, 11? Like, when do you think the slump started?
So they scored 11 runs in the first game in San Diego, that was it with a 5-run 12th, and then they've scored like just over 3 runs a game in the 10 game sets.
So yeah, so let's say the last 10 games, 6 of those games were against arguably the second best team in baseball. So, you know, that certainly plays a role, but they've also lost their first two games against the Reds. So it's more than just the opposition. It's certainly more than just the umpires.
They also split with Seattle the one game they won in the 7-of-9 stretch, or I guess, so it's 7-of-9, but they also won the first game of the 10 game stretch. So 2 of those 3 wins are shutouts. So like you basically have to like pitch a shutout to get a guarantee a win at this point.
So it's this so really it boils down to, and this is mostly on offense, but it certainly affects the bullpen as well, is got like your best players are playing fine to good, maybe Justin Turner accepting. And then your what you're expected to be your depth are performing awful. And yeah. then some key guys are hurt, and you're required to have more of those depth guys who are being awful.
Yeah, and it's like it's one of those things where like they're like having to start guys who you know normally wouldn't, and like it's one thing to have to start those occasionally, but it's like they're having at least one of those people, if not one or two, in the lineup every day, which hurts. So like the usual stuff. So the last 10 games, right? They're hitting 170. 298 on base, 294 slugging. That's, you know, putrid. During that time, everyone always harps on runners in scoring position because when you're not scoring, like, that's usually what happens. But so they're 12 for 72. They're hitting 167 in those 10 games. I looked at only in that same span, only the Phillies are worse, have a worse batting average in scoring position, 155. So the problem is that like in the 10 games they've only averaged 9 plate appearances with runners in scoring position, so they're not like giving themselves the opportunities. They usually average like 12 to 13, and so you know you need the opportunities, but you also need to do something with the opportunities. So it's kind of a problem. Now we'll sort of, you mentioned the lineup, so like the sort of regulars, right? Like AJ Pollock. Slumping, 627 OPS, 77 OPS plus. He actually missed 3 games, the last 2 because he had like a stomach bug. They're playing a day game today. We're recording on Wednesday. He's back in the lineup today. Gavin Lux has been struggling too. Like he has a 44 OPS plus. He also missed 9 games because of wrist soreness. So he's one of those guys too that's like sort of tested the depth in that, they basically had him start, you know, he started like every game but one when he's been healthy. So it's an issue. But then you start getting into the other stuff, like Edwin Rios, right? He's 4 for 43. And like this is a guy who like literally was like a home run every like 11 plate appearances in his first two major league seasons. Now, obviously, he wasn't going to keep that up. But like he hasn't been anything at all. He's 0 for his last 24. Here's where we're at with Edwin Rios. So Monday night, after the game against the Reds, the opener against the Reds, Dave Roberts was asked, like, you know, do you like send Edwin Rios down? But Roberts was like, no, you know, we have confidence in Eddie. We think he's going to produce all this stuff. He was sticking up for him. And then last night, after the second game, Rios, I believe, pinch hit only and made an out. He struck out. And then I think someone else asked it this time, but it was sort of the same, roughly the same question. And Robert's answer was, like, much more couched. Like, it was like, well, certainly we'll evaluate all of our players. And, like, and so it's like, so, like, it's not out of the question. So the issue becomes, like, if you send Edwin Rios down, who are you really bringing up, right? Like, so they literally, the only two, like, position players remaining on the 40-man roster who are healthy are Zach Rex, an outfielder, and then Keiber Ruiz, which is probably, like, the best option. Like,
especially, you and I were talking before we recorded, yeah. Is they're also using, they're being forced to use, whether it's Barnes or Smith, their backup catcher on the day, aggressively in pinch hitting situations because they're just the best. Like right now, frequently the best option off the bench, and if you're going to do that, bringing up a third catcher sounds rather attractive.
They used Barnes early in at least one of the last 2 games as a pinch hitter, and yeah, it was like, whoa, like they're hurting right now. And the other thing, reason where they're hurting, so the other thing with Edwin Rios, right, like sending him down, they sent Matt Beatty down. They were also barely using Beatty. I think he had started like one time in the first 11 or 12 games. So they sent Beatty down and then they've since brought him back up because everyone's kind of hurt. And then, since he's come back up, he's reached base like 7 out of 9 times. So like he's done fine. Not to say he's like fixed or anything, but like that, you know, that's what you're sort of hoping. It becomes less about who replaces Rios as it does about you just need to make sure Rios gets right. And, like, the other thing is the timing. Like, there are actual games this year at alternate sites, like, against other teams, like, four or five a week. And also, the minor league season starts next week. So May 4th, I believe, is the first opening day among the group. So, yeah, like, I would imagine that that might happen in the next within the next week or so. In terms of that, so but some of the guys they're using, like Luke Raley has gotten a lot of run. He's actually starting today. Matt Beatty started yesterday. Now, Raley's like 6 for 31. He hit a home run in San Diego. They even called DJ Peters up, Glendora's finest. He was so happy. He had like 15 or so family and friends that were like posing with him after the game. I believe he grounded up Friday night in his major league debut. And then he played a couple games over the weekend. He started Saturday against Blake Snell. And then in those games, he was 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts, completely overmatched. So, yeah, it's a problem. The issue is, like, you have all these guys, like hurting. Like, so, you know, we talked about in the offseason a lot before they signed Justin Turner, that how the Dodgers needed to do more than Justin Turner. They needed position player depth, and it was part of it. They're losing Jock and Kike, but like, it's not all on that. It's just like that. I think you just have to give yourself more options. Like, they did end up trading for Sheldon Noisy. Noisy has hit a couple of home runs in the last week. So like, he's been okay. So McKinstry is out with one of the Dodgers, like, best surprises this year, one of the actual new guys who was producing, but then he strained his oblique, so he's probably going to be out a couple weeks now. AJ Pollock, I mentioned he had the stomach bug for a few days. Chris Taylor had back stiffness. He missed two games and then didn't start a third. He ended up pinch hitting later. Gavin Lux missed those 9 games. So, like, with all these little nicks, like, Mookie Betts got hit by a pitch, missed a game. He had back problems earlier. He missed, like, 4. So, like, at least one of Luke Raley, DJ Peters, and Nat Beatty have started in the outfield. Counting today, it's going to be 7 straight games. So, like, the fact that you have to have one of these guys in your lineup at this point, that's been an issue.
That's outside of injuries. With those, the Dodgers are also frequently going to spell one of their infielders, and now you're starting two of them.
that's not even counting the Rios starts, which has been, you know, plentiful at this point, and like, he hasn't really produced, and so it gets to the point where you're like, wow, like, it's just, it's hurting. And like, but and so like the well, and then the, if you really want to get dark, right, like, imagine how bad it would be if the starting pitching wasn't doing well. Like,
right.
So like, the starting pitching has been like their greatest strength, and like, I think that was sort of probably expected, but I will say, even that, like, I'll get to this why in a second, why it still could be a little bit of a problem. So on the season, they're 5th in ERA, starters, 282, 3rd in FIP, exactly 3. They lead in innings. They're the only team averaging, they're 6.1 innings per game. That's the decimal 6.1. It's not 6 1/3. They're the only team averaging 6 innings to start. They lead the majors in WHIP. It's 0.891. Their strikeout to walk ratio is 7.4 as the starters. So like, they've been ridiculous, like, really good. During this 10-game stretch where they're not hitting, it's a 2.93 ERA. So like, they've been very consistent. Now I will say this: now the bullpen has been shaky, and like, it's not been like. Some of it has been outright bad, like, but there's also been, like, I think a lot of the expected pieces have been okay, but then, like, there's little cracks in the armor. Like, so the big one was the Sunday night game against the Padres. That would have went a long way if they had just closed out that game. It wouldn't have felt as bad as it probably does now. They were up 7-1 in the 7th. David Price came in. Bruiser Gratterall faced like 3 batters. He only retired 1. Roberts was like very terse after the game. He's like, "Why did you take Gratterall?" And he's like, "Well, he didn't execute his pitches." Like, he's just like, "All right." So, and then Jimmy Nelson gave up like four hits, but like two of them were like, you know, sort of bleeders against the shift, or one was against the shift, one was like a bloop. So it's a problem. And then Kenley gave up a home run in a tie game Monday night. I mean, honestly, like, but he's been generally fine. I'm not like worried. This isn't like a Kenley problem in the bullpen, but it's just like a collective problem. So in the last 10 games, the bullpen ERA is 3.94, which doesn't look bad, but they've also given up five unearned runs. Now, some of those are extra innings, but just 18 total runs in 29 and two-thirds. So it's been a problem. Now, the other issue is Price. Like, they were going to probably have him go multiple innings on Sunday, because that's sort of his thing, you know. But then after the first inning, he's like, I have a hamstring thing. And so they had to take him out. And then now he's on the injured list. So, and he's going to miss like at least 2 weeks, grade two, I believe. And then Corey Knable has a lat strain. He's going to be out months, literal months. So that those are like two of the most important pitchers in the bullpen. And then now to like, they're going to do so they're in the middle of, I believe today is game 7 of 14 in a row. So they're going to have like a bullpen game at some point in Milwaukee. Now the game notes, Dave Roberts hasn't talked yet today. The game notes list Friday starter is TBD. So that's probably going to be the bullpen game. It gives the starters extra rest. Now the problem is, you know, they went into the season, oh, we have 8 starting pitchers. Well, they have the 5 in the rotation now. David Price was one of the 8. He's on the injured list. Tony Gonsolin is throwing like long toss in Arizona right now. He's on the injured list. Jimmy Nelson is like 2 innings max at this point. So it's going to be a total bullpen game Friday, and that's it. That's sort of an issue. Like you know, we always laugh. Like, well, what about? You know, we have all these starting pitchers. It never works out that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's why you have like all these pitchers. So they're hurting a little bit right now, and like you're starting to see sort of the cracks in that. And like I tweeted out something today about them using a bullpen game, and I would say like at least 5 responses have been like, how do you have a bullpen game if you have no bullpen? Like, and so like that's part snark, but also like there's a little bit of truth to it. Like they've had, the other issue is, I don't think they've announced it yet, but they're like either very close or, maybe have possibly already passed the 85% threshold as an organization, like all the tier one people, players, coaches, and the travel party, basically. A lot of the players have gotten their vaccination in the last couple days. And then a few of them have had like, you know, feeling sick afterwards. So they've used like the COVID IL, like liberally, like, Dennis Santana missed a couple days 'cause he felt ill after the shot. Yesterday they put, what was it? Mitch White and someone else who I'm not remembering, on the thing. So like, the good news is that, like, you know, they're possibly getting to that 85% mark, which will bring loosened restrictions when they're on the road and then when they're in the dugout and clubhouse, things like that. So
Clevenger?
That's probably right. No, they brought Clevenger back.
Oh, okay. I'm like trying to remember that transaction. It was a very flurry of transactions in that one.
Yeah, well, so, it's weird. But, like, Victor Gonzalez was the other one who went on the, so, and it's very possible they could actually, while recording, that they could actually be activated before today's game. Who knows? I doubt it, but like, we'll see. But like, so when you look at a bullpen game, and it really depends on how now you have Kershaw going today, Bauer Thursday. So like, that's a strong, lead into a bullpen game in that, you know, they're like generally guys who are going to go deep. So you're not going to hopefully tax the bullpen. So you could have a Mitch White. You could have a Dennis Santana. You could have Jimmy Nelson, like all those guys like ready to go like multiple innings. And so it might work out, but like it's rough. And then also they're facing like a Brewers staff that their pitching staff has been ridiculous. They face Woodruff on Friday in that bullpen game. And then Corbin Burnes has, like, I think he's at 49 walks or 49 strikeouts and no walks. So he's been ridiculous. So it's a rough stretch for the offense to sort of break out of. Like, it's a tough task, but that's baseball, as they say. The other thing too, I would say about this start, like, if you look at it, like, Monday is going to be their 30th game. And last year, that's the halfway point of the season, right? Like, this year, we still have 5 months. Like, yeah. It's just like, it's so, I don't know. Like, part of it is like the team obviously still needs to get through the season. So it's not like, don't worry. It's more that, like, we forgot how to get through a baseball season at this point. Like, so I don't blame anyone for overreacting.
Like, I also think not only has it been kind of the bad slump, and obviously it has, but it's felt bad. Like, when starting pitching is the one thing going well, that means it's the back half of games, the higher leverage situations that are going poorly in both directions. Not only, I think if Mookie Betts and Corey Seager to a slightly lesser extent Chris Taylor and Max Muncy, because Max Muncy's walking a lot, right? But he's not getting those key hits, which is what the Dodgers are lacking. And Corey Seager and Mookie Betts have had, more so with Mookie, have had moments. You know, I think Mookie is on like a 10-game or something on base streak, but like he's hitting 200 or something. And so nothing is going well outside, like I said, of Justin Turner. Justin Turner's fine. as we come to expect with Justin Turner in April or not.
But even Justin Turner, like, he's been fine, but also in that last 10 games, like, hasn't been, like, great. You know, so, like, even that, like, it's just been like a sort of a team-wide thing. It's just, it's very odd. The other thing, like, so this slump, like, it also, we didn't really get to talk much about, it was like another very exciting, like, Dodgers Padres series. Like, Max Muncy, you mentioned, like, he walked five times Sunday. One of them was intentional, but he was also up 2-0 in the count. So, like, that also set up a thing where they walked Muncy and Chris Taylor intentionally because, again, the Dodgers were out of position players. It was extra innings at that point, so they had to bring up pinch hitter Clayton Kershaw, and it worked. After the game, they were asked about this. Why didn't you have Kershaw bunt, like, squeeze? And Robert said, well, you wanted to give DJ Peters, who was the on-deck hitter, the chance, which makes sense, right? Like, you don't want to run yourself out of an inning and possibly have a double play that ends it. But then, like, DJ Peters was struck out, like, because he's been kind of overmatched a little bit. So it's just all sort of you had, like, Fernando Tatis hitting two home runs on the anniversary of his dad hitting two grand slams at Dodger Stadium, and then he hit two home runs the next night, and then he hit another one Sunday night. He was, like, taking control of that series. You had also Tatis mocking Trevor Bauer, when he hit two home runs off of him on Saturday, but, like, in a good-natured way that, like, sort of, it was sort of refreshing to see, like, everyone sort of just appreciate that for what it was. Like, Tatis covered his eye on the first home run, an homage to Bauer doing that against the Padres in spring training. And then he did, like, a pseudo Conor McGregor strut. Even, like, Bauer was into it. He was like, I have no problem with any of this stuff. Like, it's great. It's just, like, guys going back and forth. He did have a problem with Tatis on the second one, sort of peeking back at Will Smith's positioning. He put out, like, a lengthy video on Sunday about it. That was a little bit of a kerfuffle, but nothing came of it.
What do you mean? Like, a Bill Plaschke article came out of it.
Yeah, that's
so wrong. Nothing came out of it.
So I made the mistake of, the LA Times, like, banner headline the next morning was "Into the Friar's Pan," which was a wonderful headline, and I just did the screenshot of, like, the whole page, and I immediately regretted not just cutting it off at the headline, because on that left column side was Plaschke's column and basically saying Dodgers cheated again, this time by Tatis or whatever it was, and I was like, god damn it. So I have, like, everyone in my replies going, damn it, Plaschke, like, all this stuff. But it was kind of funny. But Yeah, and like so, like that was another like it was just like a really exciting series, and it was fun. So like there was that, but then it's just like everything sort of clouded by how like just poorly like the Dodgers are playing right now.
We have some listener questions. What
we do? What? I put out, you know, just to trying to change it up. Not that we didn't have a lot to talk about. I just wanted to see, honestly, like sometimes questions flow more freely when the team's doing poorly. So like, I just want to see what people are asking. So yeah, we have some people who responded.
All right, first question's from Brandon Johnson. With the way some of the bench guys have been performing so far this season, could you see a scenario where Michael Busch sees big league time this season?
So he checked in as like the, not quite consensus, but he was basically like the number three prospect on most of the national lists for the Dodgers, behind Keibert Ruiz and Josiah Gray, the pitcher. But like, and Busch is like, you know, back end of like a lot of the national top 100 lists. That said, like it's not exactly analogous to say like he's never played above low A, which that was his level in 2019, because he was at the alternate site last year, and like so that counts for something. That said, like I think it's highly unlikely that he plays in the majors this year.
You have a poor track record making these predictions.
Yeah, but like I mean, it's
I just want to give if anyone's out there is a Michael Busch fan, you can hold on to that hope.
There's a big step between like where he's at and I think where he for him to be in the majors. Like sure. They have, I think so. They have a lot of other like potential options, not a lot, but like some that they would call up before him, and like I don't. It's not like they're going to call him up and like expect him to be a savior. Like he's not going to come in and like start at second, you know, or something like that. So the phenom type call ups have been usually to get playing time. I don't see them calling him up to be a bench guy, you know?
Right.
Like they didn't do that with like Seager or, I guess Jock a little bit, but it was September, so it was a little bit different, but he even played. So.
And we're still with the adjusted September call-up thing, right? It's 28 or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, that's like sort of the new.
Yeah. I could maybe see him giving a Will Smithian cup of coffee, in September, but even if that happened, and not saying that's likely, he would have to, like, whether he would get playing time, I doubt it.
But even like it's 28 is like nothing. Like they're just going to use that for extra pitchers and Keibert Ruiz. Like, so we talked about this too. Like, Keibert Ruiz is I think the most likely option because right now it's only on the 40 man. It's only Ruiz and Rex. So I think that's the more likely one. Like in the immediate time, but like yeah, maybe later. If Busch is like absolutely tearing up. Like say double A, I think first he goes to triple A, but then like you know it would take a little bit for that to happen.
And there's also you know we're not too far removed from this kind of being a very easy thing to at least attempt to solve via trade.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I could see that.
You know, it's not like bench guys are you know those are some of the slightly more easier to acquire, and the Dodgers certainly have. The prospect pool, not maybe what it once was, but again, when to get a bench guy, you don't need those marquee top 100, top 30 prospects to try and roll and dice on, say, a David Fries figure, which the Dodgers would certainly take right now.
yeah, exactly.
He could unretire.
I mentioned that. I sort of half seriously asked, I wonder what David Fries is up to these days on Twitter the other day. But then, like, a couple people were actually, he was at the Cardinals game. They had, like, a ceremony or something. They said he was enjoying himself, like, drinking Bud Light. I said, that sounds about right. He doesn't have to ever buy a beer ever again in St. Louis. So I get it. So he's probably enjoying retirement.
From IPTV Service Pro on Twitter. Do you have any updates on Steven Souza Jr.? If he is fine with all the injuries, could you see him being called up soon?
So the Dodgers signed him to a minor league deal. I forgot who he was with in spring training, but I believe it was one of those things where he didn't make the team, so he requested his opt out. He was a non-roster guy. So yeah, I think he's one of those guys I think would end up like calling him up, you know, adding him to the 40 man. Now they have some. I would imagine that at some point when they do need to add someone to the 40 man, they would just put Corey Knebel on the 60 day. So it's just a matter of deciding who that might be. Like it might be like say when they if they end up optioning like Edwin Rios. So, like, you know, maybe in the coming days, who knows? Like, I don't know if Souza's that guy. Now, you could also see a situation where, now, Matt Davidson didn't really hit at all, like, in spring training, but he was, like, a non-roster guy who got a lot of run and even briefly talked about, like, him being as, like, an occasional pitcher to, like, rest the bullpen. Like, maybe they call him up for the Friday bullpen game. Who knows? No, I don't know. Like, I think you're more likely to see someone like Souza or Davidson. I don't have like a report on Souza from the alternate side. It's going to be one of the things to the benefits of having an actual minor league season again that starts next week, where we can actually see like who's playing, how they're doing, like, you know, in a much more readily available fashion. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
I'm going to let you take the next few listener contributions.
Now, so before I get to this, we talked about earlier, Victor Gonzalez, like literally as we were recording, they activated him back. So he just missed a day.
Okay.
DJ Peters was briefly called back up yesterday, but he was optioned today. So, yeah. So this story I thought was interesting. We got this came via email. We mentioned last week that hardly anyone uses the True Blue TBLA podcast at gmail.com, but a few people have recently. This is from Tim Swanston via email. He had a long email about how Blake Snell reminded him of Johnny Padres, both in like mannerisms and cockiness, and now not necessarily stature. Like Blake Snell is much taller than Johnny Padres, but it was kind of funny. He said even their faces look alike. It was a very nice email, but he wanted to pass this along, and I thought this was a fun story, so I'm sharing it. This is from Tim. I want to pass on this anecdote from Dodger folklore. Can't swear it is the truth, but if it ain't, it ought to be, which is my favorite kind of story. This is from Tim again. Padres is walking by Walter Alston's office, and here's Smokey, that was Alston's nickname, tell someone that he didn't know whether to start Newcomb or Padres for the seventh game. This is 1955 World Series. Padres sticks his head in the door and tells his manager that if Padres starts, he will not let the Yankees score. The story cuts both ways, too good to be true and too good not to be true. And I completely agree with Tim. That's a perfect kind of story. Even if it's not true, you want it to be true because it's a fun story. I did some looking up to see how much truth there was to it. Maybe it didn't happen exactly as reported, but it's close enough that, you know, it's at least plausible. So I found this. This is from the Delacorte Review actually last year. It was like a long sort of like an oral history type thing of the 1955 World Series. It was centered a lot around a couple like fans who were in Brooklyn who were watching the game. The game was at Yankee Stadium, but this is the section on Padres. It says, Padres was also incredibly confident. He might easily have been called cocky. The day before, after the Dodgers had lost to send the series to Game 7, he told Pee Wee Reese not to worry. He was going to shut them out. So that both refutes the story, but also shows Padres' cockiness. Like, he knew the day before he was going to start. So, like, but also, like, the fact that he was, like, very confident. Now, when Johnny Padres died in 2008, in the Press Telegram locally here, in his obituary, this was a quote from Don Newcomb, the other member of that story. My mind went back to Yankee Stadium, 1955, the seventh game of the World Series, said Newcomb. I thank God for Johnny Padres. I remember how confident he was in the clubhouse before Game 7. Walter Alston called a meeting and Johnny said, just give me one run. Well, they gave him two and we were champs. He was a man of his word. He lived up to his word and I appreciate it. So maybe not completely true story, but still pretty great.
And you have to handle the next one because I'm not qualified. What's your favorite new food offering at Dodger Stadium?
Yeah, so this is from SoCal Librarian on Twitter. They have some new stuff. I tried a couple of them on the second homestand. I believe they're going to open up a few more things for the next homestand too. Shake Shack, most famously, is new, but it's not open yet. This is mostly because of COVID restrictions. Even the menus are limited in a few of these places, just to keep it easier in terms of flow. And trying to not get as many crowds, together in one spot, or keep people as distant as possible. Now I will say the things that stood out, to me, the two things I tried were first was Bao and Bowls. That's in the Centerfield Plaza. It's more on the right field side. It's actually next to Shake Shack. Now I looked online, it was actually weirdly on Postmates, and it had, although it wasn't, it was showing as closed, but it had sort of the menu, and they had some more options that were actually available. When I was there on the homestand, they only had a chicken bowl, which was chicken and rice. Now it came in the Dodger souvenir bowl. It's a white bowl. It's sort of shaped like half of a baseball with the stitching and everything. And it says Dodgers. I already had a few of those from a few years ago. They're actually great for cereal or ice cream, when you're at home. So that was just okay, the chicken and rice. Now, but I was looking forward most to the Bao, the pork-filled buns. That was also just okay. But, in terms of for a ballpark food, it was, good. Now, I will say this, it came with this sweet and sour sauce, which when dipped in that, it was actually very good. So, and especially for ballpark food. So I do recommend that. The other thing I tried was on the field level, a little sweet chick, which is just literally just chicken sandwiches and waffle fries. Now, the chicken sandwich, has mayo on it, which I did not realize when I ordered. I would have said no mayo, but the mayo was actually you barely noticed it was there, so it wasn't that bad. So the chicken sandwich I thought was very good, especially for a ballpark food. It was really good. Now I don't think it was as good as say Popeyes chicken sandwich in the fast food chicken sandwich wars or anything like that, but it's close enough. Now I had high hopes because the waffle fries looked amazing, in terms of crispness and all this. Now they were all pre-made and sitting under a heat lamp, and when I got them, they were cold, so they were terrible. But I think if they were hot, they'd probably be excellent. But yeah, so those are the two things I've tried. Next homestand, I'm gonna hit the taqueria and possibly barbecue, and whenever Shake Shack's open, I'm going to try that. CPK, I haven't tried, but I've had that before, so yeah. I'm sort of delaying that. But yeah, those are the things that stood out. Yeah, and then, I forgot. We jokingly mention this a lot, how we want to have Farmer John as a sponsor. Well, maybe they have some sponsorship money available now because they're no longer supplying the Dodger Dogs anymore. I guess it happened last year. But, there was no one around to sell Dodger Dogs to, so it wasn't really a thing. Bill Shaken reported on this. The Dodgers haven't announced who they're going to actually, their supplier now, but they will at some point. But it's no longer Farmer John. The Farmer John logo is not there anymore. So, yeah, we'll see. Now, I've been to, I believe, 12 home games counting the Freeway Series, and I've only had hot dogs one of the games. And I had the Super Dog, which are the all beef and a little bit bigger. Those are good. My sort of joking response was maybe now the Dodger Dogs can taste good because they've been pretty bad for a while. But I think part of that is just how they're prepared.
Yeah.
We'll see. I have, some high hopes that maybe they'll be able to do it. So I will definitely try that as well on the next homestand and report back.
And now you have a question for me.
I do. So Sunday night, Corey Seager hit the first triple of the season at Dodger Stadium for either team. Chris Taylor in the game later also tripled. The last time the Dodgers hit two triples in a game was July 3rd, 2018 against Pittsburgh. Who hit them?
I will try to answer that after this. Which two players hit a triple on July 3rd, 2018? You know what would have been funny if you had not given me the context and this was the just random trivia question. You know what was funny is the way I figure your mind works is my first just not even thinking hard on it was like just run back the same two players because haha, wouldn't that be funny? That's not the case as Corey Seager was hurt. So I'm going to start with Cody Bellinger.
No, I'm just checking to see if what he did in this game. Cody Bellinger was 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts in this game.
Okay.
No, I stand corrected. 0 for 3 with a walk.
And a well, there we go. He's great.
Matt Kemp was 0 for 4.
Well, that goes off my next guess.
So, by the way, it's not me.
No, it wasn't Matt Kemp. Kike Hernandez.
He played center field and checking... And he homered.
Hey, that's like a triple that you keep going on. I'm running out of... Okay, so Matt... So I can... now I have to figure out what position Cody was playing.
Cody was playing first.
Okay, no, I can figure that out because... Okay.
Right.
Jock Peterson.
Jock also homered. Did not triple.
Chris Taylor.
So I almost was going to be like, trust your instincts. So Chris Taylor, he homered and tripled and doubled, but he didn't single. So the triple, actually, let's see. Oh, wow. All three were off Ivan Nova. Good Lord. What was Ivan Nova's line in this game? He gave up 7 home runs. Oh. God, the Dodgers hit 5 home runs off Ivan Nova in this game.
This is interesting. I'm like putting together the roster in my head as we're doing this. Mm-hmm. Justin Turner.
No, Justin Turner doesn't triple.
He has to have had.
He's occasional. Yeah. Justin Turner has a single and a walk.
So, am I missing the shortstop or the second baseman?
Chris Taylor was the shortstop.
Okay, so
now, I will say this: he did not start at second base in this game, but Austin Barnes pinch hit and played second in this game.
Putting together roster in my head, Yasmani.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. I can't believe you pulled that out. Yeah. Grandal, he also homered. good Lord. It was an extra base hit fest.
Was the last time two players tripled and homered in the same game?
So, not looking that up. I'm curious. So Ivan Nova in that game, 5 innings, 7 runs, 9 hits, 8 of them were extra base hits. That's insanity. Wow. So the second baseman in this game starting was Max Muncy. He homered twice. So yeah, it was God. What a brutal game. 8-3, the Dodgers won. So
I would have thought even more runs.
Now, the original incarnation of this trivia question was I was just going to ask who hit the last triple at Dodger Stadium. Would have been last year. But that was also cruel. Now, I would have accepted if I asked that and you answered Corey Seager, because he hit the last one by a Dodger. But the last actual triple was by Jared Walsh in the last series of the season for the Angels. So.
I'd like to note that Justin Turner hit a triple in 2018 in Colorado.
Did he hit? He may have hit one in spring. I think that's what it was, because I remember writing something about that. And I thought maybe he might have hit one on the road earlier this season, but I didn't bother to check. So I said it flippantly. He's one of those guys who will occasionally do that. So, he actually tripled last year too.
There you go.
Yeah.
What's our Dodgers rewind?
Okay, so I mentioned Max Muncy walked five times on Sunday night. Now he tied a Dodgers record. The first one ever to do was Gene Hermansky in 1949. Dusty Baker also did it in 1980. But the last Dodger to walk five times before Muncy was Greg Brock. And that's today's sort of... it's today's Dodgers rewind. There's no sort of about it. Brock was in 1983. That was his rookie year. He had made his debut in 82, late in 82. But Brock had to like replace a legend in Steve Garvey at first. He didn't, I mean, they chose that for him. So, but it was like, you know, impossible expectations to live up to. Cause like arguably like the biggest star of the infield, not arguably he was. And like the sort of writing was on the wall, that the infield was like coming to its end. Like they were openly talking about it, like during the 1981 season. And then the Dodgers won it all. So like, it was sort of definitely the last hurrah for that team. They traded Davey Lopes after the 1981 season, mostly because they had Steve Sachs at the ready, and Sachs won like rookie of the year in 82. He was really good for the, like most of the rest of the decade for them. Now Garvey ended up signing with the Padres as a free agent in December 1982. They traded Ron Say February 1983. So like that was when they sort of made the switch. I was looking back on this to try to see like what they were saying before like the trades happened. But like there's a lot of like rumors and stuff. But I just want to sort of set the stage, right? So you had in 1981, two of the biggest like Dodgers prospects both played first. So it was sort of a problem. Mike Marshall was in AAA. He won PCL MVP. He hit 373, 445, 675, 34 homers, 137 RBIs, 21 steals. It's not accurate to say nobody knew about park factors, but like I think it was less regarded, and they were just like in awe of the numbers that some of these guys are putting up in like Albuquerque. But like Brock was also a first baseman, and he was a year behind Marshall basically. So in 1981 in Double A, in San Antonio, a less friendly hitter's park, Brock hit 295, 352, 549 with 32 home runs. This is from the Albuquerque Journal in October 1981. The writer said Brock might have more power than Marshall, which like at the time you're like, really? Wow. And then he also wrote in this piece, Brock is the heir apparent to Garvey at first base with Marshall groomed to replace Say at third. Marshall had like barely played third at all in the minors. So like, but that said, this was like a time where the Dodgers would like move people around willy nilly. So in winter 1981, there were rumors that, two different, like AP had this, like at least two other newspapers had this, where Pedro Guerrero was like sort of rumored to be on the move to San Diego for Ozzie Smith, which would have been like fascinating. Like if that was like the first time, first way they broke up the infield was by Bill Russell was the guy they ended up keeping. But like it would have been amazing, like if that. And then there was this other like mega sort of trade. This was in the Des Moines Tribune, and I believe the AP had a version of this as well. This is December 1981, around the same, they also had the Guerrero rumor, but they had this is what the Dodgers offered the Cubs to get Bill Buckner, who was older at the time, but he was also, I think, coming off a batting title, or like close enough to a batting title, former Dodger as well. They offer the Cubs Ken Landreau, and then one of three pitchers, Dave Stewart, Rick Sutcliffe, or Alejandro Pena, and one of Mike Marshall or Greg Brock. That would have been like a stunning deal at the time. And the thought was Buckner was going to play left field, and you keep Garvey at first. So very interesting. None of that actually obviously happened, but like it's just funny to sort of look back at the rumors and stuff. Now, the guy who said Brock may have more power than Marshall, it sort of came true because in 82 in Albuquerque, Brock hit 44 home runs. He also walked 105 times. He hit 310, 432, 663. So then by the time they let Steve Garvey walk, they went with a cheaper option in Brock at first. And so, like, you know, it's obviously from a fan standpoint, he's never going to replace Garvey. So he had that working against him. Now, if you look at a few things, you know, he was at least comparable to Garvey, I would say. So for his first 3 years, 83 to 85, Brock, 235, not a good average, but he walked a lot. So he had a 333 on base and a 413 slugging. His OPS plus was 110. He hit 55 home runs, and his total baseball reference war was 5.0. Garvey, over the same time, had 3.4 war. He hit 39 home runs. He had a 106 OPS plus, but he also hit 285, which was, you know, 50 points of batting average on him. 320 on base, which was lower than Brock. 415 slugging, slightly higher, but roughly the same. So, like, similar production, but also Garvey played in 60 more games. He drove in 60 more runs. Obviously, insanely more popular. He had a walk-off home run in the 84 NLCS for the Padres, while the two playoff series that Brock had in the NLCS in 83, he was 0-for-9. In 85, he was 1-for-12. He had a home run, and he walked twice, but he really didn't do anything. So, like, he has this sort of, you know, he's not going to win any sort of battles in that regard, right? So he ended up also playing for the Dodgers in 86, Greg Brock did. He was traded. So in his 4 years with the Dodgers, he had 71 homers, 108 OPS plus. Pretty productive, you know, hitter. I would argue his biggest contribution was being traded to Milwaukee at the 86 winter meetings for Tim Leary and Tim Cruz, both of whom were key members of the 88 World Series. Leary won 17 games. Tim Cruz was like a key member of the bullpen. Now, Brock played five more years. I didn't do full research on this to figure out. He was dealing with injuries or something because he was kind of done at like age 34. But he played four full years with the Brewers and five total years. Ended his career with 110 homers, 105 OPS plus, 10.0 war on the dot. Now, his issue, he was a left-handed hitter. He struggled against lefties, 655 OPS against left-handed pitchers compared to 762 against righties. The other thing is he battled either ineffectiveness or injuries, but he only qualified for the batting title twice. He only played more than 129 games twice. He averaged 120 games in his eight full seasons, so that was another sort of issue with him. It's one of those things where the hype was, you know, immeasurable on Brock coming in, so he's not going to live up to that, but also he had to replace Garvey, so he's not going to live up to that. So he may be treated a little unfairly. He was a productive player, just maybe wasn't what the Dodgers were expecting. So it's one of those weird things. Now, I do have a Greg Brock trivia question related to his walks. So in 83, when he had five walks, Brock, I believe, during that stretch also walked nine times in three games, which Muncy did recently, and then he added two more walks last night. So, Greg Brock, 83 walks, 1983, when he was a rookie. It's the fourth most walks in a season by a Dodgers rookie. Can you name any of the three ahead of him?
So I have names written down, but I'm curious before I answer.
Yep.
How many of them won Rookie of the Year?
I just want to check one thing. Let's see.
I'm a little nervous that you have to check that.
No. There's one I always sort of forget, and like, yeah, one of the three.
Only one. Oh no.
I'm just gonna double check. Wow, this one didn't even get. Okay. Yeah, this one didn't even get votes. One of them that won didn't get votes, probably should have. And then the other one finished sixth.
Okay. That is going to make my list difficult, as I think they. I will start with Jackie.
No.
Okay. Cody Bellinger.
No.
Mike Piazza.
Nope.
Steve Sachs.
Nope.
Eric Karras.
No, he didn't walk.
This is, these questions are always interesting because I have to think of people who walked, but a lot of times it's also just you were good enough that you started in the year and you got enough plate appearances that you
I'll give you one more hint, one hint I didn't give you in previous hint.
I'm going to look up these totals during our next segment.
So, one of these players is in the Jacob Birch era.
One, okay. And I cheated on one thing. I double checked it wasn't Zach Wheat, who had 40 something.
And also there wasn't rookie of the year, but you're right. You're
well, no, I mean, he was still a rookie.
Yeah.
but say they didn't have rookies back then. They liked it. man, I'm trying to think of Jacob Birch era. Andre Ethier?
Nope.
All right, I'm tapping out. How did I not get one? Man, I did good.
Okay, so
I've been on a streak lately where I've been kind of proud, and now I'm just embarrassed.
Yeah, you should be. No, just kidding. The Jacob Birch era player is Jock Peterson.
Okay.
That makes 92 times.
Makes total sense.
Now, I believe this is 20. Yeah, well, he's definitely. So, Peterson at 26 home runs and 92 walks. Brock had 20 home runs and 83. Those are the only two 2080 rookies in Dodgers history. Now, the other, the one that didn't get a vote in Rookie of the Year 1970 was Billy Grabarkiewicz. That was the one I always forget if he had won Rookie of the Year, but he obviously did not. But he had a very good year. He walked 95 times, 17 homers, 20 doubles, 8 triples. Didn't really do much after that. But the Dodger record for walks in a season, Jim Gilliam walked 100 times and won Rookie of the Year in 1953. He led the league in set with 17 triples and also 14 caught stealing, but we didn't need to talk about that.
I'm looking up numbers. Jackie got close, 74.
What?
Well, there we go. Hey, you know what? Well, cheer me up. I get to ask you trivia questions in this segment.
Yeah, and I'm going to bomb. Yeah.
do you know what it is? Do you know what
say
we're doing? Do you know what we're doing? You know what we're about to do?
We should have a name for this segment, I think.
I think we do. It's
Questions from Crit.
5 questions, more than that in terms of answers. And to start with, we have a 3-parter, I believe, trivia question for you, Eric. Are you ready?
I am ready.
It's on active pitchers and hit by pitches. There are three active pitchers with over 100 hit by pitches. Can you name them?
Okay, so I'm going to go with Justin Verlander.
Nope.
Is he one of them?
You're not going to get any of these. If you get any of these, I'll buy you a beer the next time in LA, which I'd probably do anyways, but
yeah, let's see. That makes me feel even less confident. So I'm trying to think of what about like J.A. Happ?
Nope.
Wow. Okay. Somebody who's pitched a long time, but also wild. See, I was gonna go with like Max Scherzer, you know, and all these guys, but like now since you said that, I'm not.
Yeah. I'm happy to have that been a hint.
What about? Okay. I will say. What about Adam Wainwright?
Nope.
Hundred hit by pitches. I'm not like up to like who normally leads in this category, you know. And if it's like 20 a year, could it just be a young guy who's very, very wild?
I would call all of these players veterans.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say someone who like pitched in 2010 ish.
I think they all pitched here. I'm gonna one's first season was 2005.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. One's first season was 2008. And one first season, come on.
The other thing, so I'm just going to say Rich Hill, even though I don't think he got enough opportunities, but Rich Hill?
No, but you're right to think of someone known for curveballing. And the other is also 2008. Perhaps famously in playoffs, famously against Dodgers.
What? Oh, Lance McCullers?
Nope. You're in the right territory. I'm going to make sure I just throw you off.
Charlie Morton?
There you go.
Wait, I thought it was McCullers who threw all the curveballs.
I thought it was both, but I'm looking that up now, and if I'm
McCullers,
I'm wrong.
Like, didn't he, like, end game 7 with, like, 20-something straight curveballs or whatever?
I'm looking it up now. I'm going to have that.
Fine. Yeah, but I'm going to, okay, I'll try to guess another one.
One other is it currently plays for a division rival of the Dodgers.
Oh, God. God. Wait a minute. Ah, shoot. Why can't I remember his name? Julius Chassin?
Nope.
Kevin Gausman?
Nope. I'm enjoying this. Just so Charlie Morton throws his curveball 30% of the time more than any other pitch. I'm not crazy.
It's fine. Okay. I tap out. I don't know who the other ones are.
Johnny Cueto.
God. Nice.
And Irvin Santana.
Ah, smell baseball. Damn it. All right.
Since 1960, so I'm going to give you a softball before moving on real quick. Who leads the Dodgers all time in pitchers with hit by pitches? This is not one of his questions, but this is a.
Oh, okay.
Is a pitcher with a very famous quote in regards to.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. So, the funny part about this, I'm seeing the question now because Craig sent this as part of the thing. So, yeah. I was going to guess Don Drysdale as one of the Dodgers with 53 or more hit by pitches, but. He's the one, huh?
It should be noted, Lance McCullers throws his curveball 29.5% of the time. Go away. I win.
But he literally threw, like, all curveballs.
I know, so I know. Intentional base is waste of three pitches. Is that the quote?
Yeah, or like what was it? Why would I waste four pitches when I can only use one or whatever?
Yeah. Not anymore, Don Drysdale.
Right. And the other
He probably would just be drilling people.
But also the other thing was, like, they talked about catcher signs, like if the catcher would, like, flip his thumb, like you had to, like, you know, make the batter flip or move, you know, hit go to the dirt. And he's like, they didn't really have to give me that sign. So that's another classic. So.
All right, so the question is, since 1966, four LA Dodgers have 53 or more hit by pitches as a Dodger, and one is not Don Drysdale, who only had 39 from that era.
So why? So the fact that he says since 1966, so I'm going to say Claude Osteen.
Nope.
Well, then.
I don't know why he picked 66.
Yeah, Craig is a...
tricky. He's tricky.
Yeah, he's a trickster. Let's go with that. So 1966, that's... Oh, Don Sutton.
Yep, 62.
Yeah. Of course, since he, like...
Who is forever. Third on this list.
Third. I don't remember...
One of these players is a former Dodgers Rewind top. Or two are. One additional one, since it's not Don... One in addition to Don Sutton.
Charlie Huff?
Nope.
Fernando?
Nope. Even more recent than that.
Ramon Martinez?
Yes. Was he a Dodger Rewind?
I don't think he was.
I was
just gonna guess him.
He's fourth on the list with 53.
Okay. Wait, Chan Ho Park?
Number one, 74.
Wow, because he was not that long. That's 5 years as a starter. Wow. Okay, so there's one more I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Who else hit people? dang. I mean, Oral pitched for a while. I don't remember him hitting people. I'm just going to say Oral Hershiser.
There you go, number two.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
Last part of this multi-part trivia question. Three pitchers who have pitched for the Dodgers in 2021 have 50 or more hit by pitches. Can you name these pitchers?
Okay, so got to go with the oldies.
So he has a hint if you want it.
I'm not going to take the hint yet.
Okay. It's a good hint, so.
David Price.
Yep.
59,
number two on the list.
All right.
God, both of these names make total sense. Even without that, for different reasons.
Yeah. Both of these names make total sense. Who have pitched for the Dodgers in 2020. I almost said Joe Kelly.
that would make you more. That would be very funny.
Trevor Bauer.
Yep, 65.
Mm-hmm. And then,
which is interesting because he commented that he's not the kind of guy to drill in retribution, but he strikes me as someone who might do that.
Bouts of wildness. Wow. Okay.
Bouts of wildness has certainly explained this pitcher so far.
Yeah. It's amazing that I'm. Is it Jimmy Nelson?
It is Jimmy Nelson with 50.
Wow. All right.
Last bit, he has a hint, but I'm going to let you do this. If you had to make a really educated guess on how many Clayton Kershaw has in his career, what would you guess?
So it's not 50.
Yep.
Wow, but he, I don't think he does. Maybe he did early on. Like 42.
34.
Wow, that's low. All right.
He's pretty good.
Yeah.
Would you believe? Looking at the per game stats, this is prior to Tuesday night's game. For both of us, predict basically over-under. This is the Dodgers' current rate, and we're just going to pick by the end of the season, will they be above this rate or below this rate?
All right.
Runs scored per game, 4.87.
Over?
Over. Walks per game, 4.41. You also may pick push if you want to be really brave.
Nick Bakay style. now, I don't have any context for this. I don't know if that seems absurd. Like they are, they seem to be walking.
Yeah, that seems to be maybe, like the one thing they're doing all right.
maybe Muncy's not going to walk 17 times a game. So I will say under.
I'm going to go over, but just barely. Strikeouts right. per game 9.65.
Everyone strikes out. I'm just going to say over.
I'll go under. Home runs a game, 1.22.
Okay, so 1.22 only puts them at like 190-ish, 195-ish. So I'm going to say over.
I'll go over. Runs allowed per game, 3.57.
Seems pretty good. I think...
So the Dodgers' defense. We didn't even talk about how bad the Dodgers'
defense has been. Have been bad. Yeah,
because I was doing this thing like, well, that's the ERA. Wait a minute, they may the unearned runs might be quite high this year.
The other thing that like stood out was like how the Padres like ran wild over them. Like they stole 18 games and 19 chances in 7 games, and the one caught stealing was Clayton Kershaw picking off. I forgot. I think Hosmer maybe, and Corey Seager dropped the throw at second, like so he was safe. But I'm still going under on runs.
Too. Did you say over or under? I'm sorry.
I said under on runs. All right. Yeah.
I'll go over, but again, just barely, I think.
Right. Yeah, you're probably right.
Hits allowed per game, 7.09.
I think over on that.
Yeah, probably. I'll say that too. Home runs allowed per game, 1.04.
Ooh.
It's got to be over that, right? That's so little.
It seems like not a lot. I think I'm going to go under just so we can have a different answer. So,
this is the next question. Does Josiah Gray make his Major League Baseball start before Andre Jackson or Edwin Ucita?
Okay. So just to put that in perspective, Jackson and Ucita are both on the 40-man roster. Gray is not. He's also their top pitching prospect, arguably their top overall prospect. I will say this, on the upcoming or on the road trip that starts in Milwaukee, they are bringing Ucita as part of the taxi squad. Do they call him up to start the bullpen game Friday just to throw this into a possibility? But also Mitch White is on the taxi squad, so, and they've already brought him up, so maybe he's more likely. I actually sort of think they would at some point bring Gray up because he's closer to being ready. But the fact that Friday is literally an option for Ucita is and he's also on the 40 man. Oh man, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I think this my impression is given that Ucita is on the taxi squad that they're more and it gets even more screwed up just because the minor leagues haven't started, so they're maybe more willing to carry a guy on the taxi squad and, you know, maybe dip a little bit into real playing time, and maybe they're not going to be willing to do that during the minor leagues.
There's also a timing thing, like Price hamstring right now, Gonsolin still throwing long toss in Arizona, not really close to ready. So right now the question of who is their sixth starter is a legitimate like question mark. So like there's this window where Gray, if they think he's ready, like would they just call him up then? You'd have to use an option later on in the year, but I don't think that's necessarily a problem. But I'm gonna say Gray does make his first MLB start before either of those two, but I'm sort of waffling. I will say yes.
Gray makes his start before the two, but Ucita makes his debut before Gray. How about that?
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Mike Trout's career high in doubles is 39, which he has done twice. Do you think this will be the year he reaches 40 or more?
Yeah, so Trout has 7 doubles in 19 games. He's off to like a really – he's hitting like – I think his OPS is like over 1,300 or something. He's hitting over 400. So he had 9 doubles all last year, 53 games. I do think he's going to hit 40 just because I think he's just going to keep hitting the ball hard. He's going to hit 40 home runs. He's going to hit 40 doubles. So yes on Trout hitting 40 doubles.
Sure, why not? The biggest story this week was the announcement that longtime Dodger sponsor Farmer John was no longer supplying the iconic Dodger dog. So this is a two-part question. Which brand is your favorite hot dog? Oscar Mayer, Hoffy, Nathan's, Ballpark. And would you prefer a brand or, perhaps a local sausage manufacturer to be the supplier at Dodger Stadium? Worse, Kuka is just supplying the hot dogs.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't have a preference on, like, who they choose as long as it's, you know. We're talking about something that's going to be, like, mass-produced, so, like, whatever. I mean, I think whatever works, right? Like, is fine with me there. Now, I'm not a huge hot dog at home person.
Mm.
It's an occasional thing.
Yeah.
If I'm gonna go to the store and like buy something like that to make at home, I'm more likely to actually get like sausage. Mostly because it's not necessarily like an 8-pack. Whereas, like, you know, hot dogs you can get and then you know, had as like a, it's you, it really almost is exclusively like a baseball thing. Like, okay, I'm in a baseball mood right now, and I'll get like an 8-pack of hot dogs and then an 8-pack of buns. Whereas if I get sausage, it's either going to be like, it could be a prepackaged thing, or I could go to the deli counter and get like, you know, 6 rolls and then get like the roll of sausage buns that are usually come in a 6-pack. But if I'm getting hot dogs, I usually just get the store brand. But if it's not that, like Farmer John is right up there. Hoffy is another sort of go-to. But yeah, like I guess I don't really have a preference. I'm kind of weird in that way.
My favorite hot dog I've had at a stadium was at Citi Field, and they use Nathan's. So I think that'll be my answer here. But I have a proposal. What if they just get the street dog to be the new Dodger dog? Like, who says no? Especially if they keep the pricing.
I forgot this, and it was only because I couldn't remember it, but Craig has it as one of his things, is ballpark. And I think I do pick ballpark more often, but I think part of it is because I think it's at Stater Brothers more often. That's where I usually go. But also, they usually have like the fat-free hot dogs, and ballpark has like the best ones of those that I've had. So like, ballpark is up there for me too. But yeah, street dog is cool. I think generally, I said, I got the super dog the last time I got a dog, so I think the ones with like more snap to it, and I think Nathan's like falls in that. Hebrew National is another like occasional go-to, but it's again like if I get hot dogs, it's usually out like there's Doghouse or you know, look, I'm a sucker for Wiener Schnitzel every now and then too. Sure. Right? It's a thing, and so I'm more likely to get a hot dog in that way than I am at the store.
Well, there we go. If I was fully vaccinated, I would go into a Quick Trip right now and get a hot dog. Oh man,
I'll even eat an AM/PM hot dog. I'm not opposed to it. And that said, Saturday is my 2-week date, so I'm looking to
just drive to Phoenix and get a Quick Trip hot dog.
Yes, I'm going to drive to Quick Trip, get a 44 ounce Diet Mountain Dew, and then a. Oh man, that sounds wonderful right now. It's worth it too for, you know, 6 hours worth of driving and gas.
Of course.
I love it. So I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go, you know what? I'm going to go get a hot dog right now before the Dodger game, and hope everyone had a good time listening. Thanks for all the questions, and we will talk to you next week.